Hello, and welcome to the Scripts and Scribes live stream podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Fukunaga. Before we get started, next Saturday, August 28th at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern time, Queen Sugar showrunner and writer-producer on The Blacklist and Lincoln Heights, Anthony Sparks, will be here to answer all your questions on writing, staffing, and more. And you can find our socials on our website, scriptsandscribes.com, to keep up to date on all of our upcoming guests. But today, I'm pleased to have back on the show a returning guest, a literary manager and producer who was a former creative exec at Adelstein Productions and head of development at PCH Films before turning to representation, joining Epicenter in 2012, where he represents a stable of working and up-and-coming screenwriters and filmmakers. He's one of the producers on indie thriller One Bedroom and the Oscar-winning Judas and the Black Messiah. He's also an alumni of Southern Miss and a graduate of AFI. I'm happy to have back on the show Jared Murray. Welcome back, Jared.
Thanks for having me. Good to see you.
Good to see you. It's been a little while, but I'm happy you could join us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and thanks for accommodating the time. You know how it is with the baby.
All good. I understand. My son's now 8, but I remember the days where your world sort of revolves around their nap schedule.
Yeah. Pretty much nap and feeding, and you know we don't go too far.
Right. So let's see. Before we get started, if anyone has questions for Jared, please drop them in the chat now, and we'll answer them as soon as we can. But first, we do have some questions for you that I think a lot of people in the audience who may be interested in hearing about, because you've been on the podcast a couple times before, but for those who are watching and listening who may not have heard those episodes, can you tell us again a little bit about your background? I know you graduated from Southern Miss and AFI. Then what happened? How did you break into the industry and ultimately end up as a lit manager and producer at Epicenter?
I actually did not graduate from AFI. At a certain point I was interning that first year.
Sure.
And, I decided like, this is a lot of money. I don't come for money.
Right.
And like, I'm very thankful for my time there and the people that I met, and, but it's just financially, it just didn't quite make sense for me. And so, I decided to leave and just, you know, I needed to try to find a job. And so I was interning at, interned at Silver Pictures, they were making Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and Veronica Mars at the time, and that was kind of like the first real, I didn't say like the most formative experience for me in terms of just getting an education in the day to day of, like, you know, the business, like, because like the two of the execs there didn't have an assistant, so interns had to rotate on their desks, and so you'd have to pick up the phone and like answer calls and do scheduling. And this is like, you would, at the time it was just writing, you know, it was a calendar, you know, like a physical calendar. You like, you'd write down appointments in the calendar with a pencil, you know, but you learned like who, like what kind of scripts were selling and who were the hot writers and, you know, things like that, and so that kind of opened my eyes a little bit to, you know, what I thought I wanted to do at the time, which is go into development and AFI, I think, you know, is definitely more of like a, you know, you're going to come out of there, like knowing how to like physically produce a movie. Mm-hmm. You know, which I think is an invaluable skill if you want to do that. I kind of wish I, like, you know, I can look at a budget and schedule, but like, you know, and sort of know like what I'm kind of know what I'm talking about a little bit, but like you come in at, you know, that second year is kind of more like, you know, you definitely get like a trial by fire as far as that goes. But anyway, so I, you know, in sort of doing this internship, I kind of realized like, hey, like this might be more my speed. And so that summer I interned for Original Film. And this was when Neil Moritz was partnered with Marty Edelstein. They had the TV side, and there was a management component to it as well. And I worked mostly on the TV side. And this was kind of Marty and Don Peruzzi broke off and got their own pod deal. Prison Break got greenlit shortly after that. And so then I went with them, and sort of, there was an empty office there. So I was the intern who like took over an office and was just kind of like setting up, you know, I was, you know, taking meetings and calling agents and, nice. And things like, and they're like, who the hell is this dude? you sort of at that, you know, I look back on it, I'm like, you know, you don't really know what you don't know. And, you know, I was very fortunate. Like, it's definitely like right place, right time. They brought on, when they formed the new company, they brought on a feature executive named Scott Nemus, as luck would have it, like he was going to bring over his assistant, and they wanted a little too much money, and I was like, I'll do it, you know. So that was kind of how I got my first job. Scott was very good about, you know, including me in meetings and, you know, and sort of, you know, helping me kind of get to where I wanted to go, and, you know, encouraging me to be entrepreneurial and, you know, and then, you know, bringing in scripts. And eventually I brought in the script for Hannah, and that was kind of how I got promoted. You know, I worked there for a couple of years, and then that led to, that led to me getting promoted, and then that movie eventually got made, and then strike happened, and like a lot of people, I found myself out of work, and then I went and ran development for the guys at PCH. They produced Groundhog Day and Walk the Line, and that lasted a couple of years. Learned a lot, and worked with some good writers, and even met my first client at that job. That job ended too, and I was sort of at a crossroads personally and professionally. I'm just like, okay, well, you know, if you can work, your ass off, and if the ball doesn't bounce your way, you're kind of, you know, kind of screwed. Like, it's so much of it is luck. And, you know, I've always been very entrepreneurial, you know, even as a kid, I was trying to convince my, the gas station around the corner for me to like set up a video store, like, let me run it. You know, like, that was kind of my, you know, so, right. I moved in with a friend of mine, or he offered to let me live with him. And so you just kind of like to figure out my stuff. And, I signed a couple writers, and then that was kind of, you know, somehow survived for like a year and a half. Like I signed two writers because I wanted to like, I, you know, having been on the development side of it, mm-hmm. you know, seeing that like, you know, sort of younger managers who tend to like oversign, and you know, and it was, for me, it was about like quality over quantity, and you know, just if I'm going to build a business, I'm going to build around two really strong writers. And so one of those was Will Burson, who was nominated for an Academy Award for Judas and the Black Messiah this year, and Josh Greenberg, who was a co-EP on Last Man Standing.
So you picked well.
Yeah, I think so. You know, luckily they stuck with me. And then, I did a deal for one of Josh's pilots a few months into it. I was kind of just doing what I could to make ends meet at that point, you know, because I wasn't really making any money. And, but you, you know, just I knew people, but you have to kind of reintroduce yourself to the town. So it was about just, you know, being conscientious about how I did that and the types of material I was sending out. And then in 2012, I met Albert Cantor, who was, you know, also went to AFI, and he was a few years after me. And we started Epicenter, and that was, I can't believe how quickly this time has gone. You know, so nine years, almost to the day. And you know, we're now a six, soon to be seven person company. We brought on another manager in 2018. Mm-hmm. And we recently promoted our assistant to coordinator, and we just hired another, New York based, manager. So we're definitely, it's kind of surreal to, you know, sort of think about where we started to like where we're at now.
Now, talking about your first two clients, when you signed them, at what stage were you at sort of in your career, and how did you find them? Because a lot of newer writers think that, oh, I'm going to shoot an email to CIA, to Anonymous Content or whatever. And oftentimes they're better suited to reaching out to assistants or reaching out to and growing with people, you know, people who are hungry, you know, managers who are less experienced, who are just starting out in their career as well. So can you talk a little bit about where you were sort of in your career when you signed them, and how you found them, and how did you sort of grow together?
So where I was at with my career at that point, I was buying food from the 99 cent store.
Okay.
I was living in my friend's guest room. I was not like, you know, life was not like ideal, mm-hmm. you know, at that point. And, but I, you know, I grew up like, you know, like I didn't grow up rich like, at all. So like, I was sort of used to scarcity, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, in my mind, like all I could do was like, just work to get out of it, you know, like no one's going to help me. Or like, not that no one helps. Like I take that back. Like you had a lot of help, but you have to like be motivated to like put in the work to put yourself in that position. And so it was, you know, I was kind of either this is gonna work, or I'm gonna go back home to Alabama. You know, like mm-hmm. That was kind of my. My philosophy at that point, you know. So you know, and I met Will just generally, you know, he had another manager at the time, and this was when I was at PCH, and then and we just sort of stayed in touch. I think we reconnected because I was like, we lived in the same, like we were living in the same neighborhood at the time. And we just got coffee one day and, you know, he said, I'm like waiting for a response from 360, but like, you know, let's like, you know, we can work together if you want, you know, it was definitely like, you know, I definitely had to prove myself, you know, and you know, just we started with some, you know, he had a drama and a spec pilot that he'd written, and you know, just I started sending it out, and you know, you know, getting in meetings and sort of, you know, like just showing them I could do this. Mm-hmm. And you know, and then Josh was someone I knew from just we had met when I was with I was at Edelstein, and yeah, he had written, he'd come up with a pitch for us. It was sort of a sports spoof movie, and he's like one of the funniest people I've ever met. And so it was, we had stayed in touch, and like I remember specifically, like, you know, like he had another manager at the time, and like it just wasn't really working, and like we'd stay in touch, and I'm like, if you know, because I'm you know, I'm very conscientious about, like, you know, just like, you know, I can't, you should fire your manager, and then we could, if it's not working, and then we could talk, you know, that right. was sort of, you know, but we had, I remember, like, you know, I remember very clearly going to see Fast Five with Josh, and then, like, you know, then we, and I said, hey, what do you think about working together? And he's like, all right. So, and that's been, it was 10 years ago, you know, it was, and he was the first person we ever got staff, at Epicenter. And now he's, you know, he's doing very well. So it was, you know, those were the, you know, that's kind of how I met my first two, clients, and kind of where I was at, like, personally and professionally at the time. Like, I, you know, it was sort of, it was definitely a sort of moment of truth for, mm-hmm. for me, as far as, like, kind of, you know, this, you know, my family was like, oh, but you should come, you should just, you had a good run, you know? but I forget, what was the third question that you asked? I mean, it was about, like, kind of how I met my first two clients and sort of where I was at that point. And, I think there was one more.
I don't know. I feel like you covered what I was asking.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought that was okay. Cool.
But now it's interesting how your first two clients, one is now an Oscar nominated screenwriter and the other is an upper level, TV writer. For you, especially starting off, it seems like there are two different sort of worlds, like having a bunch of contacts in television, have a bunch of contacts in features. Managers, especially starting off, tend to focus on one or the other, but you sort of did both, which is kind of interesting.
Not necessarily. I mean, like, because Will was mostly a TV writer. I mean, like, I think 90 to 95% of the, mm-hmm. the work I'd done for him over the years has been TV.
TV, you gotcha.
Know? And Judith, I mean, you know, Judas and the Black Messiah started as a script, you know, as a spec that Will had written. And you know, that was the first feature that we had developed together. And so it had mostly been because, Will also had a comedy background. Like, he worked on Scrubs and, Arrested Development and, you know, but, it, you know, is, you know, has that side of him and is very talented as a very talented comedy writer, but also just, like, a, you know, just insanely good drama writer. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of the, you know, and I'd say, like, it's still, I mean, it's maybe a little bit less now, but, like, I'd say, like, I don't know, 75% of our business is still TV, you know. But it was, and I did have that like, that TV background a little bit, you know, working with, when I was working with, Scott and Marty, and, you know, so I knew, you know, I definitely knew people in that space. And so, like, when you're starting out, like, especially back then, it was like, you know, movies, like, that was my, you know, like, I don't want to work at TV. I'm like, looking back, I'm like, man, I should have learned a lot more, you know, about TV, you know, but because, you know, that's kind of where everybody's going now, and it's all kind of blended together anyway, you know. But yeah, so that was so yeah, it was you know, they're both, like, mostly kind of pushing out there as TV writers and introducing them to TV execs, to answer your question.
Gotcha. Perfect. I have more questions for you about Epicenter, about representation, all that kind of stuff. But we do have some questions from the live chat, which I just kind of wanted to throw your way. Let's see here. Famous Motion Picture says, hey, Jared, congrats on the baby. Congrats indeed. Just wondering how you found your feature writer-director clients versus screenwriters. I'm not sure. Your feature writer-director clients. Oh, I guess filmmaker clients versus screenwriter clients.
It's a little, there's no one way. I mean, I can think of, you know, represent a writer director named Yen Tan, who directed a movie called 1985. That was one we saw at South By a few years ago, and you know, he's a Texas based filmmaker, and did this very kind of quiet character drama, and like my partner and I were just weeping at the at the end of the movie, and we're just like, we should go talk to this guy. And so that was how we found him. We found Catalina Aguiar Mistretta. She went to AFI with Allard, and she was in the screenwriting program, and got her first movie made in Mexico. And that she was kind of off to the races after that. She got another movie made, Spanish language film that was released here. And then, she got very busy in the episodic space. I'd say it's a little kind of, it's varied. I wouldn't say there's one kind of, there's no kind of, rule about where we find, or how we sort of look for filmmaker clients versus, or director clients versus writer clients, or, it's, a lot of referrals. Mm-hmm. It's becoming harder and harder to sort of like seek out, cool shorts, or, just because there's so few hours in the day. But and then like it was Tyler McIntyre, who's been very busy these past few years in the horror space. Like he also went to AFI with my partner, and he was in the editing program. And so he made a horror movie on like a shoestring budget, and like it did really well. And he made another one. It's just been kind of he's been busy ever since. And but I'd say like it's harder for us to it's tougher with clients who just direct as opposed to people who write as well. Mm-hmm. Just because you can always write a script, we can get that out there and sort of with them attached to direct, as opposed to like trying to get an open directing assignment. So mm-hmm. our philosophy is like if they've got a great short or a great directing sample, they have a script they want to do, and that just makes it easier for us to kind of get something out there, Mm-hmm.
Let's see here. Farzin Farzam. Hey, Farzin, how are you? Question for Jared. How did Judas and the Black Messiah come to life, and what was Will's path from signing with you to being nominated for an Oscar? Love the movie and the script.
Oh, thank you. How much time do we have? Let's see. In the first part, Will... Will was just said one day, like, I want to write a movie about Fred Hampton. And so, I've learned with him, I try to, everybody's different. I'd say at the company, our philosophy is like, let's try to like, harness the essence of who they are as artists, and and not try to like put them in a certain box, or like we try to just, here's what you should be doing, it's like it was trying to kind of like guide them to a certain place, or like just help them kind of like get the best the best version of their voice, and sort of like this was like one of those things where like man, this is probably going to be, you know, this is not going to be an easy one, but like, you know, and so, you know, if you want to do it, like, you know, and so we sort of, he wrote a script, and it was more of a, you know, his was more of a, Cradle to Grave, Fred Hampton biopic. And so we were, you know, we spent some time working on that, and then was just sending it out and trying to get it packaged, and, you know, sending it to filmmakers and actors, and eventually it got to Shahar King, who was I got a call from his agent saying, you know, he had an idea for a movie about Fred Hampton too, and read Will's script and wanted to talk about collaborating on it and so set up a meeting with Will and Shaka at the Lucas Brothers, and then kind of that was, and you know, Shaka was sort of, you know, their idea was sort of more to do the sort of, you know, kind of thriller, more of a, you know, sort of undercover, there's more of a, you know, more of a thriller as opposed to like a straight up biopic. Mm-hmm. And then Shaka had knew Ryan Coogler from, they met at Sundance years earlier, and I think, you know, and Shaka called him up about this, and he was like, yeah, I'm in, and I'm in. And so then Shaka got Macro involved, and then they, you know, they worked on the, I forget, they worked on the script for a while and then pitched it, or anyway, they took it out as a pitch, you know, to, you know, interested parties, and Warner's was, to their credit, said yes. And so that was kind of, it's crazy how, like, from Will's first script, I think, to like finished film was like maybe 4 years, 3 years, something, which is like, you know, for this kind of movie is like crazy.
I thought you were going to say it was like 9 years or something.
That was, you know, there was, you know, pretty smooth, all things considered, mm-hmm, you know? Yeah. And then they shot the movie in, I think, what was it? Yeah. Fall of 2019. What was the other part of that question?
Oh, just mentioned sort of his path from signing with you to being nominated for an Oscar.
Will's like one of the smartest people I've ever met, and you know, he's so like, the first thing we worked on together was a pilot about Elliot Ness, and which is, you know, I'm still hoping we can get going one day. He wrote this like insane Bible that's like, so, you know, he's a research fiend, and sort of like really does like deep dives and you know, really kind of, you know, this was not the Untouchables, you know, it was, you know, sort of, a peek behind the curtain of like who this guy really was, you know, and that was the thing that like, I knew he was smart, but when I read that, I was like, man, this is like, this guy's pretty great. So like that we developed, you know, we sent that out, and it was, you know, we had some wins, you know, here and there. And we sold a couple of things. We sold a pilot, this kind of King Lear set in the world of Big Pharma. And it had Edward James Olmos attached, and you know, unfortunately that didn't get picked up. He wrote a prequel to Hamlet as a 1-hour drama, which is, you know, incredible. And he was, He was a producer on CEO, the George Saunders adaptation, which went to pilot at Amazon with Glenn Close. And he was the one who reached out to George Saunders and, you know, said, I think CEO could make a good TV show. And so unfortunately that one didn't get picked up either. But, you know, it's we've, you know, it's about like, you know, it was about just kind of, you know, getting him out there, you know, introducing him to people and like sort of building that fan base, you know, and sort of it's taken, you know, and people on the Peter side kind of knew him and, but it was, you know, by and large, it was, you know, introducing him to a ton of TV people. And I think, you know, Will's kind of, he self-generates a lot. Like he's not necessarily waiting on anybody to give him an idea. You know, he's just like, he finds something that he wants to do and just kind of like just goes full bore into it, you know? And so it was, you know, it's definitely one of those, like, I knew he was going to like I knew this guy was going to like be big. It was just like, you know, it was getting everyone else there, you know?
Right.
And so it was, you know, you know, I really, you know, I think he believed in me too. And so it was kind of like, you know, we, you know, it took a while, but like, you know, we're, you know, it's kind of a dream for a rep to kind of see, you know,
oh yeah,
see someone, you know, just sitting, you know, see him like, you know, sitting with the team at the Oscars. It was kind of surreal. Mm-hmm. But it was sort of, you know, after sort of, you know, because you work so hard, it's hard to kind of see how much progress you're making. Mm. You know, and I sort of use this as for the company too, because like, you know, we have just kind of tunnel vision, and you know, most people, 99% of my day is just people telling me no, you know, and so, but in those wins mean so much, you know.
Right. So can you tell us a little bit, for those who aren't as familiar with Epicenter, sort of what sort of clients you represent, although you had mentioned that you skew heavier television, although obviously you've had success in the feature world as well. But as a management and production company, you know, sort of a mandate if you have one, and you know, you'd mentioned you now have managers not just in LA but you know, in New York and expanding and growing and this kind of thing.
I'd say, you know, it's, yeah, some of our clients, I mean, we, you know, yeah, mostly TV. We've got, you know, like Stephen Canals is, you know, just finished on Pose. He's up for, the show's up for multiple Emmys, including, you know, and Stephen was nominated for directing, on the finale, which is huge. We have people, you know, Bridget Hales just made a pilot for ABC called Epic, she just wrote Enchanted 2 for Disney, which just wrapped production. She's been, you know, she's one of my AFI classmates who mm-hmm. I kind of lost touch with, and you know, met, I ran into her at a party one night, and she sent me her script, and this was like 2014. She basically has not stopped working since. It's been, you know, she's been like Amazing Stories and Once Upon a Time and things like that. She's doing production rewrites on another Disney movie right now. Who else? Jason Cohen, is a documentarian who was nominated for an Academy Award for a short doc. He created a show called Encore for Disney Plus. Hmm. with Kristen Bell. And, you know, he's done, he had a show on CNN with Van Jones, and we're trying to get his first feature directing project off the ground. Let's see who else. And then Nick Yarborough on the feature side recently wrote a prequel to Training Day 2. And you know, hopefully that's going to happen. And he's been pretty busy in the feature space. Not necessarily, you know, not much interest in TV, but he's, you know, he's written for, he's written movies for Barry Levinson and wrote a movie about, The Elephant Man, Joseph Merrick, that's getting some interest in getting some director and cast interest right now. And then we have someone staffed on Beauty and the Beast for Disney Plus. Crystal Houghton Ziv co-show ran The Purge season 2. She's worked on like Deadly Class and things like that. And Amadou Garba is currently has Dr. Death. He was a co-producer on that show. And he's kind of worked his way up to co-EP very quickly. He's become very valuable to, you know, all the showrunners love him. And, you know, he's a guy that, you know, we're, you know, who we just kind of has very impressed with how far and how quickly he's come along.
We try to find that voice that who do we think is going to make a
splash as far as like, how do you kind of differentiate your material, you know, and help it kind of stand out from other things that are out there. You know, with Stephen Canals, it was, you know, when we signed him off of like, I mean, he had written a version of Pose when he was at UCLA, and we sat down with him. And he's like, well, why do you want to represent someone? You know, and we're like, well, why wouldn't we? You know, like, it's, you're, no one's doing what you're doing right now. And with Pose, we're like, you know, we don't know if the world is necessarily ready for it right now, but we're going to try to like get it out there and see what happens. And eventually, like, you know, Ryan Murphy got it, and it was sort of, you know, that was kind of that one came together so quickly. Next thing we knew, we were in production on the pilot, and like going to New York to Hammerstein Ballroom for that premiere was like probably one of the highlights of my career. Wow. And like, you know, they had the whole like devil catwalk, and like, you know, and everyone was kind of sitting in the balcony. They had the dance floor kind of blocked off for the party. And then sitting there with his family and like just seeing like their reaction and just like, you know, and like the buzz in the audience, you know, just like, I think there might be something special here. And that was to this day, I think like, you know, probably like top five moment for me. And I've also been very busy in the like IP space. I mean, I've got a guy who's been selling a lot of short stories, and that's been kind of, you know, that's, people seem very like hungry for those, which is
really,
you know, luckily there's, you know, that's, we've had a lot of success in that on that front over the past year. I don't know if it's...
Where were short stories published? Were they published in...
They weren't published.
Oh, okay. So you sent them
out.
Oh, yeah, interesting.
Very interesting. I can't really... It's kind of flies in the face of, like, conventional wisdom. It's like, you know, A, they're not published, but there's enough there for people to see, okay, there's a really good idea here.
Right.
And, you know, like...
It's like a pitch.
How do we kind of... Yeah. And how do we kind of, you know, you're not giving them too much.
Right.
It's been really cool to see that, you know, people are buying original ideas and, you know, it's not, even though it is, you know, it is kind of IP. Yeah. I mean, it is IP, but like, but people are kind of hungry for,
it's original IP. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're not
sort
like
of established.
People don't have to read a whole book,
right.
You know, you're giving them kind of, just enough to kind of whet their appetite. And like, you know, they're like, you know, let's go try to put this together, or like,
right.
You know, let's, we kind of, you know, so that's been kind of fun.
Interesting.
Our newest manager is a woman named Shanoa Estrada, who's, like I said, was New York based, and she's got a reach in the comedy space, which is kind of not something that we have comedy writers, but we're not like I wouldn't call us like a comedy shop, you know,
right,
like there
right.
are, there are places who
you're not a three arts.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's, yeah, yeah, it's, cause I think comedy's very hard, you know? I think it's cause it's so subjective. I mean, like, you know, what's funny to me might not resonate with you, or, you know, vice
right.
versa. It's, and so we're kind of, we saw that she was kind of doing some, she's been doing some cool stuff on her own, in that world. And so that was kind of giving us more access in that space. That's been kind of a fun world to explore.
Let's see here. Taylor Jewig, question for Jared. What trends have you noticed in successful or just interesting scripts you've read over the last couple years?
Trends I've detected, just like genre wise or like,
It doesn't specify. I'm assuming any number of, whether it's subject matter, whether it's genre, I'm sure it's just things that seem to recur, themes.
I don't know. I'm trying to rack my brain and.
Well, for example, I know some people were asking about, do more positive scripts have a better chance because of the environment we're living in, things like Ted Lasso, feel good stuff,
right,
as opposed to darker things. So have you noticed any sort of trends like that?
I've noticed people saying that people want those things, but I haven't necessarily read anything
as a practical matter.
Right. Yeah. It seems like that's the people kind of want lighter fare, and that's been, I'm hearing that's kind of been, those are needs as far as, you know, but I haven't necessarily come across, I haven't noticed any trends as far as the things I've read or like, you know, it's still kind of varied as far as that goes, not necessarily like, you know, I think, you know, people seem, actually, I mean, I've seen it be like, people seem to be, sending more true stories I don't know if it's maybe, or I'm just seeing more like out there, just kind of, you know, I don't know if it's just because people query based on Judas or I don't know, but like, you know, I am seeing a lot more of those.
Mm-hmm. What about
which I think are like, you know, I think are awesome, and I love true stories. It's like, you know, it's and I don't think, you know, that's something I don't think people will get tired of.
Right.
You know, for me personally, I love, you know, I'm all about like things that don't depress me. You know, I grew up on horror, and like I love horror movies and action, but like, you know, I don't necessarily need to be reminded of like where we're at right now. You know what I mean?
Right.
But it's, you know, important to like stay on top of current events, and like we're my wife and I especially, it's just like what are things that kind of make us feel good. Mm-hmm. You know, I could sort of I can definitely speak to my personal, you know, like leanings right now, you know.
Yeah, which are pandemic scripts, I'm assuming.
Yeah, send me all the pandemic scripts, right? Yeah, send me every you know, send me every script about you know,
new virus outbreaks and things.
Virus outbreaks, insurrections, whatever.
Oh,
you know,
sure. Like, yeah.
All the things.
New Great Depression.
Yeah.
So what kind of material are you sort of, I don't want to say looking for, because you're looking for great material, I'm assuming,
yeah.
But is there anything that you're leaning towards nowadays, or things that you haven't seen a lot of that you wish you would see more of?
Yeah. No, I mean, let's see, something I'm, like I said, I true stories are always, you know, fascinating to me, but you know, but they're always, true stories are always so hard to put together. You know, it's for me personally, I'd love to see, more action. Like, I'm sort of, I feel like that's always a, like action and horror are kind of always like, you know, I feel like there's always kind of a need for those,
and features or TV or both,
features, I would say, but like, yeah, I'm speaking specifically features. Mm-hmm. I mean, like I do think there's a lane for smart action shows.
Mm.
Which I can't think of too many off the top of my head, but then again, I can't, like, you know, someone asked me what I'm watching, I'm like, oh man, what am I watching? You know, like, it's hard,
right,
for me, like, you're so kind of overwhelmed by your choices, you know. It's like, you know, like, what do you want to watch? Like, it would sit there, like, you know,
scrolling,
like,
for half an hour.
Yeah, like half, you know, we could have watched a whole movie by this point. You know? I love reading great action scripts. Like, that's kind of, you know, and I think things that can be done for a price, that we've, for like under 20, that people seem to be kind of hungry for those, and where I'm starting to kind of like, I'm hearing, like, just, you know, talking to producers and financiers, you know, that's kind of they're looking for things like that, you know. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure there's, like, you know, for every time someone says we're not looking for this, or like it's there's always something like that comes along to disprove that.
Right.
You know, like what's kind of, it's hard to, you know, I know I would love to see more, I want to see more like mid-range studio comedies. Like I don't, you know,
yeah,
just the, every,
are...
there's just no one's making those really. Mm-hmm. Anymore. And like, you know, I was talking about it with a client who has, you know, has something in that, you know, in that arena and on that, you know, scale wise kind of fits that, but it's like, you know, who's, it's a great idea. Who's doing it? Hmm. Who's doing these movies anymore? But then you're like, it becomes like, well, okay, no one's doing these anymore. How do we convince people that this is what they need to buy, you know?
Right,
and
right,
like
right.
That people will go see it, you know? So I think it's just about like, you know, how strong is the idea, you know? Like how are the, you know, I think one of my favorite comedies of the last few years is Game Night, you know, which I think like, which was a very smart comedy that like, you know, one slight shift to the right, like could be a thriller, you know, it's a,
oh sure.
But like, but you remember those characters are so like vivid and mm-hmm. well drawn, you know, and so it all kind of, you know, like what do I want to see, you know, like what would I watch? It's like,
right.
You know, it's kind of starting from there. I feel like I'm rambling at this point. Sorry about that. I all that to say, I don't necessarily know. I haven't really heard about, you know, I personally don't know about like
specific trends,
but I can speak to like, this is what I'm hearing.
Hmm. Let's see here. Noah says, what are the most common routes through which you sign clients? How would you recommend writers searching for reps proceed? For that second part, I would assume it depends on the writer and what stage they're at in their career, or if they have contacts and things like that. But I'll let you answer. Obviously, so the beginning of it was, what are the most common routes through which you personally sign clients?
Usually, it's referrals. I mean, like it's become. I think when I may have spoken to this when I was first on the podcast years ago was, mm-hmm. you know, but, you know, it's, I tend to like, you know, I err on the side of like servicing the people that we have, you know, and like, I'm, you know, like those are the clients are my priority. It's like,
mm-hmm.
there's, and given, you know, just kind of where we're at in the, you know, being locked down in our house, you know, and sort of there's even fewer, like, it's even harder to kind of like seek out, you know, like things from, you know, like someone who's on the blacklist site or whatever, you know, those feet, you know, I hear, you know, I see, you know, things that sound interesting. I just don't like necessarily have time to read them. And like it, you know, because you're so you have project things you need to give notes on and like, and things, you know, I feel like we've had to send stuff out like every week this year. It's been, you know, which is good, a good problem to have. It's better than like people not writing, but
right,
you know,
right.
it takes up a lot of time and like, you know, you're, and also I want to be like, when I sign, this is getting a little off topic, but like when I sign a new client, I want to know that I'm being able to like service them and do a good job for them.
Mm-hmm.
And if I don't think I can, then I won't, you know, it's like, that's very important to me, as you know, just as a, you know, as a person and like, you know, just knowing what it takes to kind of get, knowing the work it takes to kind of break a writer and sort of, you know, introduce someone and like getting that first job. Like that's, mm-hmm. you know, that's one of my favorite things. Like is that nothing beats that feeling of like getting someone that first, you know, helping someone get that first job. And, but like when I always feel like terrified when I sign a new client, because you're like, now you have to deliver, you know,
right.
Like that's, so, you know, we can, I know we do a pretty good job for people. And like, but it's, you know, ultimately like you have to come through. And so like, but getting back to like, you know, I it's referrals these days. Like it's, you know, we always, you know, it's increasingly rare for us to sign new clients. But you know, we still will read things and like we have, you know, We have people reading all the time. There are things that we've found that we liked, and it's just like, okay, do we have the bandwidth? Do we think this person is going to break through? Is this script unique enough? Is this person different from, differentiating themselves enough to break through in the marketplace right now? Queries are just hard. I just would love to be able to respond to all of them. It's just like, mm-hmm. Every now and then someone will come through and I'm like, okay, I gotta read this, but it's rare for us to, we've signed one person off a query in 9 years.
Oh, wow.
He's no longer a client, but it's usually we get the emails about contests and we get the blacklist the weekly emails about blacklists and mm-hmm. we'll find if somebody sounds interesting we'll check it out, but usually it's someone we know saying like, hey, you should check this person out, that's kind of how we've, especially now, how we're kind of operating.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's see here. Sort of transitions to another question. Karma Codeine says, does Mr. Murray accept scripts or loglines or query letters? If yes, how should we contact him? do you have general contact for the company, or do you have specifics?
Like I said, we have the info@epicenter-la.com,
mm-hmm.
Which gets checked, it's hard for us to kind of take on. It's hard for us to really respond to queries.
Are queries read but not necessarily responded to all the time?
Usually if they go to that email, mm-hmm. they will get read, get responded to. If they get sent to me, I can't they get sent to me directly. Most of the time I probably won't respond.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not I always feel like an asshole but I just don't, I have to account for every minute of the day,
Right.
And thankfully we just got a nanny, which has been huge.
Sure.
And so that's definitely, helped me, free me up a little bit during the day, if I don't respond to you, don't take it personally.
So referrals are the way to go. If somebody has an in, even if it's somebody you didn't necessarily know, but someone who was in the industry, a producer, a director, a fellow writer, you would take a look at a query more seriously based on that. If somebody had either passed on or they mentioned somebody that they knew that you knew or something like that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, for sure.
So that's good advice there. Let's see. Simba Dibinga. Hey, Simba. I wrote a political thriller pilot that tackles a particular constitutional amendment. An exec said she didn't see the hook of the show somehow. How do you define hook for television?
Good question. I think it's the thing that's going to keep people coming back week after week, it's what's the, I think with TV, it's, with TV, it's more about the characters, or maybe traditionally it's kind of more about the characters, but now it's like, you know, you have to kind of, you know, you have to kind of separate yourself conceptually too, because, you know, it's, you know, like a Cheers is like pretty low concept. Like, you know, it's once you get past like the, you know, it's like, you know, it's a people at workplace comedy in a bar. It's just like who are these, you know, you tune in to see what the characters are going to do. Like, right. It's not necessarily about like, you know, like those are the people you kind of fall in love with. Or like, I think that's,
it's not 24.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, I think maybe in drama, it's more, you know, it's more kind of conceptual, but it's like, it's, you know, it's, yeah, it's like, what's kind of the conceptually, what's that, you know, like, it's about a constitutional amendment. Like, okay, then what, you know, like it's, you know, what's the engine of the show,
right.
You know, and you know, what's going to kind of, you know, make people tune in every episode. I say each week, like, I'm, you know, but like, it's, but, yeah, what's going to keep people watching, you know?
Yeah. What are the stakes?
I think it's like, being, you know, and I'm also kind of, you know, I think people are definitely cautious about like, you know, political
right
content right now, just because I think, you know, again, like getting back to our, you know, what we were talking about earlier, it's like, you know, do people necessarily want to see that? Or like, you know, like I personally don't, you know, like I feel like I get enough of it from just from, you know, the news, and, you know, I'm unless there's kind of a unique sort of spin on that, you know, I think, people are kind of wanting to see like more positive things. So maybe, you know, I don't know. I'm, but as far as like, you know, to answer, that question, I think like, you know, when people talk about, look, it's kind of like, what's that kind of unique conceptual, like angle that's going to like, you know, make people tune in and keep them watching.
Right. Let's see here. Michael J. Manson says, does and would Jared or Epicenter represent international clients such as those from the UK?
Yeah, we represent a writer who's London based right now, actually. We have a client in Spain. We have a client in Japan who's, he kind of goes back and forth. He's in the US now. Who else? I know we have two clients in Mexico. Let's see, who else? I'm sure there's someone I'm leaving off. So if anyone's listening to this, I apologize. But yeah, all that to say, we have people on, you know, like all over the place. You know, it's not definitely not a, I think like just the world has become, I mean, and the marketplace has become so global, you know, that I'd say, you know, when I was first starting, it was like, you know, just Hannah is like an example, like, you know, like let's develop a version of this, like set in the US. And like, you know, that was kind of the thinking at the time, like, and you know, when like the, you know, the business has become so global, you know, and you know, you know, Netflix has, you know, all these different, you know, local language divisions, and like, you know, like people watch the hell out of those, you know, there's no barrier to like access, I think, has become so, you know, has opened up. Like I think you know, people are way more open to having international clients. Cause like, and as you know, like the last year has shown us you can work from anywhere. So like,
right.
You know, as long as you're kind of, you know, if you can figure out like, you know, figure out how to Zoom and like, you know, then, you know, you can pretty much do anything, you know, mm-hmm. We have clients all over, and we're definitely open to, you know, international creators.
What are the special challenges for representing writers from outside of Los Angeles that they should know about? Not necessarily on your part, because obviously your job is sort of the same, I would think. Obviously, feature writers only, TV becomes much more of a challenge. But for a writer who is in the UK or Canada or Australia or wherever, what are some of the things they need to know about sort of breaking into Hollywood, so to speak?
I mean, it's, you know, I think it's kind of, you know, it's the same as I would give, you know, mm-hmm. you know, someone who was in the US. I mean, it's, you know, if you can, you can write an awesome script from anywhere, you know, I think it's,
do they need to come to Los Angeles a certain number of times a year, or be prepared to, or?
I mean, under normal circumstances, I would, you know, I'd say if you, maybe, but then, like, but before COVID, I would say, you know, yeah, sure, of course. But like, I'd say it's like good, but not like you got to do this, mm-hmm. you know, like now I've definitely like changed my tune as far as that goes. I mean, you can, you know, if people are taking in-person meetings again, like, you know, would I recommend someone to come out right now? No, but like, but if you write a good script, people are going to want to talk to you. So like they'll make time. And, you know, we've seen that, like, you know, like I said, you can work from anywhere. So like, I think it's all about, like, you know, it's all about the idea and the material. But I would say, like, you know, if there's, you know, don't feel like you know, like being out here is the, like, end all be all anymore. You know, I think, obviously if there's, like, you have a specific thing you have to, like, you've got to be in person mm-hmm. for, or, you know, or if you want to, like, come out for a week and take meetings, it's like never a bad thing.
Sure.
But, you know, but then again, I wouldn't say like it's a total, like, necessary thing anymore, you know?
I've gotten a question a number of times from writers outside of LA, especially from outside of the US, when querying, although, not necessarily obviously the best way to reach reps, referrals of the way, but inquiring, is that something they should put in their query or leave it blank and hope you love the script and then discover that they are in France or Germany or, you know, Korea or wherever they happen to be?
I don't know. I never really thought about it like that. I, you know, if, cause like you're, you know, and I say, you know, I commented on querying just from my own personal, like, you know, mm-hmm. this is, you know, I can only kind of speak to my, like, you know, what I'm kind of going through and sort of, you know, our process. And like, I'm not saying that to be discouraging. And like, you know, because I know there are people who do respond, you know, read and respond to queries and, you know, it's just like, I think you should, like, people should still do that. And like, you know, I want to be like encouraging of them to, you know, cause you never know, you know, like that's the thing, you know, who's gonna, you know, like, you know, who's gonna read and respond or like spark to something, you know, but getting back to the question, I wouldn't really, like, I think it's another, like, detail about a writer that I think is interesting. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like where you live kind of informs who you are. I mean, I don't know, like you're telling, when you're querying, you're telling your story. You're telling the story of you in addition to, like, kind of, you know, and that's, in addition to kind of you know, pitching a project or whatever, and sort of, you know, and I think that like I pay attention to that kind of stuff, like those sort of personal details, you know, because it is, you know, it's about the, you know, it's about what's on the page. This is like who you are as a person. Like, I think, you know, I think we've as a company, I think we rep really good people. Like, that's kind of, that's very important to us, you know, and I think, and you're kind of in our day to day, it's, you're kind of like, you know, we sort of spin our own yarn tales about, like, you know, what's this, you know, what's the story of this writer, and, like, you know, in pitching them, and, like, getting execs, like, interested in reading. Mm-hmm. So if it's, like, something that, like, we can use to kind of, like, you know, like, another kind of cool personal detail about someone, then, like, yeah, go for it.
Okay. We've gone over an hour. We're about 70 minutes into it. I do have a few more questions, but if you have time issues, then okay. So
I'm good. I'm good. So just, you know,
okay.
Long, yeah.
Yeah. Normally we'll go from 60 to 90, depending on the guest's schedule. So, but my question was, again, talking about representation, it's often viewed as sort of that holy grail for emerging writers. Like, once a writer gets a manager, you know, or an agent, then it's the road to Easy Street, right? You know, they write, you sell, everyone gets rich and famous. But sort of as a lit manager, what are the realities of literary representation to sort of get everyone, you know, understanding of the what it actually is and what it actually means to get a lit rep?
I mean it's a, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say, like, you know, I would say to, you know, temper your expectations as far as, like, I think it's a good step in the journey. Mm-hmm. And I think you, but, like, also you want to be with someone who, like, you want to be with the manager who's a good fit, not necessarily just, you know, someone who's just, you know, who's the best fit for you, you know, like, and, cause, like, you know, you're often better with the, you know, no reps than with a bad one, you know, like, and cause that could set you back even further, you know? I think, like finding someone who you kind of are creatively in sync with, like, that's very important. You know, somebody who's going to, like, do what they say they're going to do. But I think you don't really know that until you're kind of in it with them. And I think, but, like, you know, you should know that it's a long haul process. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not gonna, you know, like, it's not gonna happen. It's not gonna happen overnight. And, like, I think the best relationships are the you know, those people who aren't, like, necessarily waiting on, you know, here's, you know, the people who are like, well, here's a script. Like, let me know when you sell it. Or, like, you know, or just like, you're on to the next thing. You're like, you know, you're thinking about new ideas. You're thinking about, like, you know, how can I, how can I make things happen for myself as well? Building my network and all those things. I think, like, those are the, you know, the things that people should be doing, you know, and you know, we sort of, you know, say, like, you're the CEO of your company. We're the, you know, so it's your, you know, look at yourself as a business. And so, like, you're kind of, you know, we can advise, we can, like, you know, we can help, like, open doors and, like, you know, make things happen, but, like, it's ultimately, like, kind of up to you to kind of, like, you know, you've got to be, you know, you've got to be your own business, and, like, people who are constantly generating,
right?
Like, those are the, you know, like, those are the, I think those are the people who kind of, who kind of set themselves apart, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I would say, like, this is definitely a long game, You know, it's I've been doing this for almost half my life at this point. You know, like I'm, and I still feel like, I guess it's a good thing. Like I feel like, you know, we've had some success, and like I'm very thankful for like my our business and our clients, and like and you know that we've had some good wins the past few years, and like but like I feel like I'll always feel like I'm, you know, you're you know, at every level you're like, I always make this joke in our meeting, and at every level, no matter where you're at, there's always somebody who's not going to call you back,
right?
You know, like there's, it's like, because you're like, you're always kind of, you know, you always need to kind of like have that hunger, because like this thing is, you know, this business is all consuming, you know, you have to really like, you know, it's you know, I think I've certainly missed out on things that like, you know, if I had a normal job that like, you know, there are certainly things that I've missed. Yeah, I feel like I've, you know, probably missed out on, but like, would I trade that? Like, probably not. Cause like, right. I can't imagine doing anything else, mm-hmm. you know? So you have to like, you have to decide like if there's anything else you would you could be doing, you should probably go do that. You know, mm-hmm. like it's unless you like, this is, you absolutely want to do this, you know, like, cause it's becoming, I think it's weird. It's both like, it's such a good time to be a writer, because I feel like there are so many avenues now, which never, you know, but that, you know, it's but it's harder to get that first job, you know, mm-hmm. like it's, I think, you know, TV staffing is, you know, has gotten a little harder, you know, it's because rooms are smaller, and, yeah. You know, it's, yeah. And, you know, getting someone at first one is tough, but like yeah, I mean, we have to just, you know, you have to know where you kind of, you know, you're dedicating your life to this, so it's mm-hmm. like I don't recommend, you know, people to like, you know, if there's a way you can support yourself, you know, while you're, that helps you write, then, you know, great. Like that's awesome. I think, you know, but I think it's definitely like, you know, we're in this for the long haul. So, mm-hmm. you know, you have to, you know, if something's not happening right away, I think it's, I think patience is key. As much as you can be patient. But just but the first and foremost is like, just keep generating. Like mm-hmm. Once you're, you know, what's that next idea, you know? That's pretty much it.
I mean, that's good career advice, I think, for writers. But the last question I have, which is sort of a broad question, sort of ties into some of the questions that other people have been asking, like Noah and Karma and even Michael's near the end there. And it's a big question. It's the one that nearly everyone listening probably wants answered. And just sort of in broad terms, or even specific, if you have specifics, ideas, but how can a newer writer get a lit rep? What are the ways in that you know of that are accessible to those who don't have referrals to draw from, who don't have a network necessarily? What do they have to do to get read? I mean, who should they be reaching out to? Where should they be submitting their scripts? Who should they be emailing or querying to get, not necessarily for you particularly, but just sort of in general, what would your advice be to someone like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the Blacklist site is a good resource. I mean, mm-hmm. like, you know, because people do, you know, if you get good feedback on your script, and, you know, like, I know you have to pay for coverage, I think, but when, you know, but good coverage gets, you know, like those log lines get sent to execs, and then, you know, like, I see that, you know, people do see and download and, you know, and read and all that. And like, I can, you know, I know, like, you know, my like John Zalzerny and like the guys at Bellevue, they're all over, you mm-hmm. know, that, and I know they've had a lot of success with, you know, that way. And then, you know, Nicole, obviously that's, you know, that's obviously the big one, but like, you know, there are, you know, the script pipeline, you know, like those, we get those emails as well. Like here are the finalists, here are the log lines. Do you want to like, you want to check these, any of these out? Like mm-hmm. these writers are unrepped, and, you know, sometimes we'll request those, you know, like, or, you know, depending on like, you know, if we think there's a cool idea, like I think, I don't know. I'm trying to think of like in a final, the final draft, final
Break, draft.
I think there's a few others like that, that are reputable that, you know, I'm kind of, you know, blanking on right now, but like those, like not just, I mean, there are a million screenwriting contests out there, and I you know, I see people talking on Twitter a lot about like just how, you know, and it's not, you know, it's not the be all end all of like, you know, but like I think any avenue you can get to like get eyes on your material, you know, like that is, unless obviously, like, you know, don't go broke submitting to screenwriting mm-hmm. contests, but like, you know, but like anything you can do to get eyes on your material, you know, like, you should be doing that, you know? Mm-hmm. But I think those, but like the Blacklist, I know, is like, I know for, you know, like that's an outlet that I know works, and like, you know, and I can speak to, you know, my colleagues, and like, you know, that use that, and like, I know, you know, and people read those Nickel Porter finalists and semifinalists, and like, you know, those will get read, you know? Mm-hmm. I think it's just kind of, and obviously, like, if you don't have, I mean, if there's any connectivity to, the question was about people who just don't have any connectivity to, you know, like the business right. at all, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So, I think, like, you know, just like entering those contests. I mean, like, those few things I mentioned, like, those are good, great. Like, if something's good, my philosophy is like, anything, if it's something is good, it will like, people will find it, you know?
Right. And if it's, I mean, there's a lot of fellowships too for television, but you have to be in LA to participate in those. But if you're going to write for television, you kind of have to be here anyway. So
right.
That's sort of part of that whole thing.
But I found, like, you know, there are people who've gotten their first jobs who don't live here, you know,
sure,
like
sure.
over the past year. I think, you know, I know there are some people, there were some in-person rooms, mm-hmm. Writers' rooms that are happening now, but I think for the most part, it's still virtual. But I think you don't learn as much by
being virtual
that way. Yeah. I mean, I hate that this kind of, you know, but, you know, it's, but it's also like first writing job. You're not going to sure. say, you know, not going to say no to it, you know? No,
right.
For TV, I mean, it's, you know, I think there are, yeah, those fellowships are great. I mean, the Warner Brothers, program, we just had someone, who finished that. We, you know, the, Writers on the Verge is a you know, I've always been a very vocal kind of, you know, critic of kind of just the diversity programs, you know, like, and how it seems to be, you know, for a long time, it seemed like they were paying, you know, just lip service to diversity and, you know, the people who would be like, quote unquote, a free writer to the show's budget. And then like someone who, you know, someone gets their first job and then like, they don't get asked back because the second year they are part of that budget, you know?
Right.
Which, you know, and I hope that's changing, you know? And, you know, I think we are kind of seeing sort of more of a, you know, more of a change as far as like, okay, people kind of putting their money where their mouths are as far as that goes.
Right.
So hopefully that keeps going, you know, I think that's, but you know, yeah, I mean I think for TV, there are also, you know, I think Blacklist is a good like way to go for those too. If you're like, if you're a new writer, because again, like we get those, we get the feature email and we get the TV, the TV email with like, here are the things that are, that people are digging this week or, you know, whatever. It's, so they're, like, I think for, I think it applies to movies and, television.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. We hear a lot of good things. We've had Franklin on, but it was a long time ago.
He's built quite a business for himself.
Yeah, no, he's done tremendously well from what was just a list that was aggregated based on the best scripts, unproduced scripts in the industry, to now it's a huge industry standard for screenwriters trying to break in. So it's crazy. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh no, I was just gonna say that's 90 minutes. I appreciate you coming out.
That flew by. Jeez.
Yeah.
I'm sorry for I feel like I ramble a little bit.
No.
I hope everyone listening got something out of it, and you know, I appreciate you having me on again.
No, it's always great to have you on, Jared. Yeah, a lot of great stuff. We covered a lot of great info. Some of the comments were very nice. So thank you for coming on. I know your son just woke up for a nap, so I'm sure he's driving your wife crazy running around.
It's lunchtime right now, so okay. I'm hiding in his bedroom right now, and I'm just kind of like, okay, let's keep it going for as long as we can. Weekends are usually my days with him. So, right. Give her a little bit of a break. So she was nice enough to, say, go do this podcast.
No, it's cool. Simba says, great answer to his question, which was about the political thriller and the constitutional amendment. So thanks. Marcus Aurelius says, thanks for coming on the show, Jared. Absolute gold as usual. So great job. So thank you so much, Jared. Let's see here. Be sure to follow Jared on Twitter if you're not already. Your Twitter changed. It's now at The Official Word.
Yes.
Okay.
It's a wrestling thing. I know, you know, if you follow me, you know I watch wrestling.
Yeah, I used to watch wrestling. Like... I'm not as big of a wrestling guy as I used to be, but I definitely used to.
When back in the 80s or like, you know, you like when someone, you know, when Gorilla Monsoon would. Mm-hmm. You know, like someone win a match, like here, and here's the official word, and like go to the ring announcer.
Yeah,
and it was just like, you know, I wanted something a little bit different for my handle. So it's been that for like a few years now. But it's one of the, I feel like, you know, you're most people either like when they watch it as kids, they either like fall out of it within a few years, or like they, you know,
carry it on.
Rare people who like continues to watch it.
Right.
But it's the only thing I kind of watch purely for entertainment, you know, like it's there's always an aspect of work that involved in, you know, kind of everything, you know, who do I need to know from, you know, or like, who do I know who's involved, or like, you know, it's like I can watch it and just purely like turn my brain off, you know what I mean?
Right, right. Yeah, a few weeks ago, we were, or maybe it was a couple months ago, we were talking to Mark Blutman from Boy Meets World, Girl Meets World. And he actually invited on RJ City, who was a wrestler. Who, incredibly funny guy. I went to WrestleMania 2, so I mean, I'm an old school kind of wrestler guy when I was a little kid.
In LA?
In LA. Like the sports, LA. It was the one that was in the sports arena, the Philadelphia Spectrum, and I don't know, Madison Square Garden. And then you had a few matches in your city, and then it was televised for the rest on a giant screen.
That was the one with the Hogan and Bundy.
Bundy, yeah, the cage, yeah.
It's a good it's a good. That was a good show.
Yeah, I was a kid at the time. It was a lot of fun. Anyway, thank you for coming on, for your time, and hopefully we'll talk again soon. And to all of you listening, watching, thank you for joining us again today. See you next Saturday, August 28th, for our Q&A with Queen Sugar showrunner Anthony Sparks at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. Have a great weekend, Jared. Thank you so much.
Thanks, you too. Thanks, everybody.
And have a great weekend, everyone. We'll see you next time.